Welcome back to the Microconf podcast. I'm your host, Rob Walling. And in this Microconf Tactics episode, I react to the most controversial opinions about startups on X/Twitter. So I put out a tweet that says, what's your most controversial opinion about startups? Got some great responses. I think there's like 50 or 100 responses. If you click through to the YouTube video, you can see the Twitter thread and you can read through all of them. But I react to some controversial and then a lot of not so controversial opinions that I don't know why people would post them. I think they thought they were controversial, but I would read them and like, oh, that is pretty much what I say. But it's like, don't do B2C. And it's like, I don't know, that's not controversial to me because I say that on, you know, on this show and on the YouTube channel and on Startups the Rest of Us all the time. So anyways, this is a fun video where you can hear some controversial and not so controversial topics, as well as hear my take on them. I hope you enjoy it. Before we dive into the episode, I wanted to let you know that it's your last chance to apply for Microconf Masterminds. Applications close on June 12th at midnight. Finding the right founders to surround yourself with can feel like an impossibly hard task. Over the past few years, our team has successfully hand-matched over 1,000 founders into mastermind groups by looking at your revenue, team size, strengths, goals, and a few other data points to make sure your peer group is the right fit. Once matched, you'll also have access to our mentorship series, a three-month program where you can connect with some great minds in sales, business development, marketing, and more. If you're looking for accountability, honest feedback about your business, and the opportunity to make new friends that care about your success, you can learn more and apply today at microconfmasterminds.com. Applications are closing soon, so make sure to get your application in by June 12th. Again, that's microconfmasterminds.com. The world is full of opinions. So when I asked on Twitter about your most controversial opinions on starting a startup, I was bombarded with over 150 responses. A lot of them were in line with my thinking. Some I wholeheartedly disagree with. So I thought it'd be fun to dig through them to see what we can find. Our first comes from Derek Martin. Loving your niche isn't necessary. All that matters is happy customers and good margins. So I could go both ways on this one. And in fact, I've had companies I've started where I didn't like the niche and I didn't really care about the problem I was solving, but that was in a great little lifestyle business. If I'm going to spend 5 or 10 years personally working on a problem and working with customers, I want to really love what I'm doing. I have met people like Derek Martin who can work on any problem and it doesn't really matter to them. But I actually want to hear from you. I want to know what you think. So post in the comments if you think you could start a company in a niche that you don't love or don't really care about. And our next response, Don Felker says, 50-50 co-founders rarely ever work. There needs to be a decision maker with veto power to move the ball forward. Although I respect Don a lot, we've known each other for more than a decade, I have to disagree with this one. I've been in 4 business partnerships and 1 marital partnership. And all of them, except for one, have been 50-50. And I've seen across the 170-something companies I've invested in, the vast majority of them have an even split between co-founders. If it's 2 co-founders, it's usually 50-50. If it's 3, 33 and a third each. I'm not saying it's the right way just because a lot of people do it, but I do think that getting everyone on at the same page and getting people on board with a decision and not needing to exercise a veto power can totally work. And it's something that I've used day-to-day in my businesses. And so while I see the logic here, and I've actually heard this from a lawyer or two saying someone should own 51, someone should own 49. It's not something I agree with. Lane from boot.dev says you need hard skills yourself. You can't just hire for everything. And I would agree with that. Now, Craig Hewitt responded and he says, I have to disagree. I have no discernible skills, but we've made it so far at least. And Craig Hewitt has a 7-figure SaaS company. Now, I think Craig is doing himself a disservice. He does have discernible skills. He is great at sales. He's actually good at hiring. He knows marketing well enough to be dangerous. Like he's good at operations. He's good at starting companies. And so he does have skills. The thing where I see people failing is where they come in to start a SaaS and they're not a developer and they're not a product person. All they have is an idea. And that's where, like, what hard skill do you have at that point? If you're not able to sell, if you're not able to market, if you don't know the space, if you can't, even if you do know the space, I guess, if you can't build your own product, if you can't market it, like SaaS is so intensive when it comes to these hard skills that you need that I do wholeheartedly agree with Lane on this one. Nicholas Overloop says, hire only senior people in the beginning. Juniors are cheap, but a waste of time and money. So I will say in my last SaaS company, Drip, I hired a handful of juniors. I also had a senior who was my co-founder, but we hired juniors because we didn't have the money. And it took us a tremendous amount of time. I'm talking hours per week, and I'm talking months and months to get them up to speed. I kind of wished I had just hired some mid-level or some seniors. And once we had the budget, once we got acquired and we had all of this budget behind us, we pretty much only hired seniors beyond that, with the exception of some support people and some folks to train them up. We wanted to give back to the community. And so we did let some juniors in purely, not purely, but almost for their benefit more than ours. But I can't disagree with Nicholas that if you have the budget, and that's the key, seniors are expensive. So it's hard to find them, right? It's hard to find really good seniors that aren't super expensive. But with those things in mind, I think Nicholas is onto something. I don't even think that's controversial. Is that controversial? I asked for controversial takes. Some of these are not controversial at all. Our next one comes from Alexa Tessick. They say, building 12 products in 12 months and other similar challenges are just a waste of time, in my opinion. You cannot do anything meaningful in a month, except maybe get lucky with a prototype. And even those require some form of iteration with users first. Thank you. Someone speak in my, is this controversial though? This is that thing of like in Silicon Valley, they want you to go all in on things. So it's not controversial there. It's certainly not controversial in my circles of the bootstrapped, mostly bootstrapped software founders who are being ambitious and trying to build a 7 or 8 figure company. I think it might be with more of the indie hacker types where it's like, I want to move to Bali and make $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 a month. I'm just going to throw a bunch of stuff at the wall, see which one gets there fastest. And that's, you know, making a bunch of little bets and trying to make this work with that crew. I think that this would be controversial, but I have to agree with Alexa. I mean, I've been harping on this and ranting on it online and offline and on the podcast and on this YouTube channel about putting a bunch of things, 12 things in 12 months, in my opinion, do it as a circus, do it because it's fun, do it as a performance, all that's fine. But to expect that you're going to start a software company that's going to get to $1 million by doing that is delusional. And I don't know anyone, the 170 something companies I've invested in and the dozens that have hit that $1 million, $10 million, $100 million, or more mark, they didn't start by launching 12 things in 12 months. And so we can see the flip side of that coin when Dhruv Bhatia says, don't go all in for a while, hedge your bets. This is interesting because it's don't go all in for a while. And see, I don't like the hedging your bet if you truly are trying to build a 7 or 8 figure company. I think, again, if you're trying to build that 10, 20, 30K lifestyle business, you know, you can do a lot of things wrong and still get there. And so you can hedge your bets all you want. Just realize that you are, I think, limiting your success. You're also hampering your learning. You're not learning as much by pushing something forward and learning how to pivot and move it and talk to customers. You're just throwing it out there. Oh, if it works, great. And if it doesn't, I'm going to walk away and move on to the next thing. I just don't love the approach. Danny Postma says, most people want to play startup instead of actually building one. Thank you. Is this controversial? Because I have heard other people say this and I've said it myself, but I wholeheartedly agree. I need it to be spicier, but I'm going to admit, I just like the take here. Rosie Sherry says, it's a lonely world as a founder, but it's even lonelier for women founders and will often end up surrounded by entitled men who take advantage. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's controversial. Probably there are men out there who don't realize that this is going on, but being a marginalized individual, an underrepresented founder, an underrepresented person in any group is hard. And I think that whether you're a woman trying to start a startup, whether you're just someone who the rest of the people in the room don't look like you, I think it's a real uphill battle. And I don't know that it's talked about enough. I think this is a reason that from the MicroConf stage, I say things like, if you're in this room, you belong here as much as any of us do, because I want MicroConf and the bootstrapper community to be as diverse and inclusive as possible. I don't just want it to be a bunch of people who look like me. Anything we can do to encourage underrepresented founders to become more involved and feel less intimidated by our bootstrap scene, I think we should do it. And that's why we started our MicroConf scholarship program, where we provide scholarships to folks who otherwise wouldn't be able to attend. And we've been focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion for well over a decade. Here's a spicy take from Jan Philip Peters. You can bootstrap two-sided marketplaces. No, you cannot, Jan. So I, and for people who know me, I say constantly, don't bootstrap a two-sided marketplace unless you have one side of the marketplace already. And in fact, the conversation goes on for a couple steps and I say, Jan, have you done it? And he said, yes, I have. So bravo. And it's like, I feel like Jan is the exception that proves the rule. Obviously, it is humanly possible to bootstrap a two-sided marketplace. It is just not putting fortune in your favor if you're going to do it. It means you're fighting a war on two sides. I bet if I interviewed Jan, he would say, yeah, I did it, but I wouldn't recommend others do it. That's usually what happens. It's like, I did things wrong and we succeeded anyway, but we stacked the odds against us. You know, we really made it difficult on ourselves. So obviously it is possible, but it's still a piece of advice I'm going to continue to give. It's not never do it. It's really to do something else first and then think about two-sided marketplace if that's really where you want to go. I wouldn't even have an issue with this if so many people didn't want to do it. It's just such a common question that I get on startups for the rest of us. If I'm looking to do a two-sided marketplace, and it's like, have you ever started a startup? Do you realize how hard that is? Fraser says, B2C products are a waste of time and you should not build them. Focus on B2B and you will make money. And that's not that controversial if you follow this channel, right? We have an entire video, which you should check out if you haven't already. My Tiny Seed co-founder, Einar Volset, weighed in with PLG, which is product-led growth, is where founders too scared to do sales go to hide. Spicy take here. I like this take from Einar. It's that the product-led growth, meaning I'm going to build my product and it's going to infiltrate these large companies and it's just going to kind of sell itself. Is it a myth? It's as close to a myth as a lot of these things are, much like freemium. Well, if I just have freemium, I'm just going to have this viral loop and my product will market itself. I'm just going to build a great product and it will market itself. It's a thing that as developers and makers and builders, we want to believe. So yeah, if you're scared to do marketing or sales, just don't start a startup, right? Just go do something else, work a full-time job or build a video course or go build an audience, you know, do something that doesn't require you to do marketing and sales. Because if you think you're going to rely on PLG, you're probably wrong. There are very, very few companies that make it work. And those that do are highly skilled at it and they have budgets and they do it very deliberately. They don't accidentally fall into the pit of success with product-led growth. They really focus on it. And my last one for today, Jens Schumacher says, don't hire an agency to build your prototype. Find a technical co-founder instead. I can't disagree with this. I mean, we have seen maybe 10 or 15% of the companies we fund with Tiny Seed that don't have a technical co-founder. And the ones who don't have a technical co-founder really run into headwinds because hiring an agency, they're expensive. They don't care about your project in the long term. It's unfortunate. They care in the short term, but they will cut corners to hit deadlines or to hit budgets. And then you wind up 2-3 years down the road with a code base that can't support itself. And it's like building a skyscraper on a shaky foundation. I'm not saying every agency, and I'm not saying never use an agency, of course. But if you can get a technical co-founder who can then at least, even if you hire it out, they can at least manage those developers. Or if you do hire an agency, they can manage the agency and they can look at and maintain the code quality. Then you're in such a better place. It's like, I wouldn't start a venture fund without a co-founder who knows the business and finance world, knows all the stuff about private equity and venture capital and how to raise funds and how to deal with it. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to learn that. It's complicated. It's technical and it's not my gifting. And so when I started Tiny Seed, I found a co-founder, Einar Volset, who had that piece of it. It's similar with SaaS. Personally, if I was a non-technical founder, I wouldn't start a SaaS without a technical co-founder. Now, am I saying no one should ever do it or you shouldn't do it or never, 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 always, always, always? I'm not, obviously. But as a rule of thumb, which is a lot of the things that I talk about day to day, I think that if you're going to start a SaaS, you're better off if you learn to code yourself or you find a technical co-founder. If you aren't following me on Twitter, you can join the conversation over there. It's twitter.com/Rob Walling.